5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Hello, hello, welcome to episode 74. TV Zone Plus part. I've forgotten what to do and how to say it because it's been so long. Episode 74 of the TV Zone Plus podcast brought to you by Starburst Magazine. I'm Paul Mount and
Scott Holmes.
Worryingly topless person on the computer screen is Mr. Scott Holmes. We're back after a fairly long break, about 6 weeks. Probably, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Because we're still recording remotely, as you know, we're in a lockdown situation. We've been in lockdown situation again for about 6 weeks in various boroughs in Wales. I went down first, then Scott went a bit after that. And as I think I put a couple of things on Facebook to say we weren't doing much at the moment because of the lockdown thing. We'd rather do the podcast face to face, but it's just not possible.
Well, it's just not happening. We were told 2 weeks of, roughly 2 weeks of lockdown never got lifted or really even talked about again. Mm-hmm. And today, what's the date today? It is 19th of October. So a couple of hours ago, we were informed that Wales is going into a firebreaker lockdowny thingy for 2 weeks, so the entire Wales is being locked down like it was back in March. Everything's closing, and things are just going back to the way we were at the start of the year.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is literally a complete lockdown again. Everything's, you know, non-essential businesses are all shutting again. Presumably cinemas, pubs, gyms, all these things are going to shut down again for 2 weeks at first.
But everybody, go buy your toilet roll quick.
Yeah, quick, and pasta and bread. It's all a bit grim at the moment. The first lockdown, the big national one, I think I coped with it okay because we were all in the same boat and it was a new thing and it was a novelty and it was horrible, but we sort of got through it. But the trouble is, we then came out of it and we started being out and about and again getting that taste of normality. So when we went back into it locally 6 weeks ago or whatever, it just seems harder now trying to get through. You know, we can keep busy and keep occupied and there's plenty to do to entertain you, but there's still that feeling of, it just chips away at you, certainly chips away at me, and it sort of erodes your confidence and your determination to do things, and everything just sort of, certainly the last couple of weeks we've been very bad. I've just sort of really lost.
Well, you just feel like you're gonna, when the rest of the country or the rest of your borough is stopping, you just feel like you're gonna stop as well, didn't you?
Yeah, and especially when you could see the rest of the country was still doing things. I know that now restrictions have been imposed in Liverpool and certain other areas, and Manchester are fighting against it, and London have got, so everybody's coming round again, and I feel sorry for all those people as well. But it's just the fact that we're heading into winter and there's no end to this in sight. We're going to be like this until about March. We're going to keep drifting in and out of lockdown. And it just seems we're going into lockdown so they can suppress things for a couple of weeks. And then we come out of lockdown and then it's going to rise again. We're going to keep going, bouncing in and out of lockdown for the next 6 months. And it's just exhausting to sort of try and cope with it all the time.
That's the thing, you know. It's I was made jobless during the last lockdown. I've been looking for work left, right, and centre. I've applied for many, many things. I've had a couple of rejections, but most of them are still ongoing applications. You know, and it's because of lockdown, so people are just not risking hiring anyone. A friend of mine, for instance, he'd been looking for work for ages. He finally got a job doing glass window sheets in a factory. After 2 weeks of working there, they've laid him off.
Yeah.
Because it's just normal work. So it's, you know, it's mad that everything's just going all a bit tongue, really.
You sort of feel sorry for employers as well as employees, because people are trying to keep their businesses going. They don't know about hiring and firing, if they want people, if the work is going to be there, if they're going to be open, if they're going to be closed. Nobody can plan anything. People can't plan holidays. People can't really plan Christmas because you don't know what's happening there. And I know I'm in a fortunate position and I don't work, so I can sort of sit and watch it all, but it's just uncomfortable watching the country suffering like this, the whole world suffering this way. It's just been, everybody's, I feel, I don't like complaining about things because everybody is in the same position, but we all deal with these things in our own different ways. And sure, it affects people in different ways. And I've been generally okay, but the last couple of weeks, it's just like, it's just starts to get a bit heavy, and you start thinking, what's the point of everything that you do? And all the stuff that I enjoyed doing has stopped. I mean, there's no filming stuff has stopped. There's nothing like that out there at the moment. When the trouble is now, I'm in the position of thinking, well, is that ever going to come back again? And do I want to do it again if it does come back? I mean, I was supposed to do something last week, which I didn't do for various reasons. And you just lose the will to want to do things. It does have enough, sort of a mental health effect, I suppose, and I know loads of people are suffering, but it just saps your ambition, I suppose. Yeah. It's hard to put into words because everybody deals with it in different ways. Like I say, I'm very fortunate and I don't have to worry about work and that sort of stuff, but I still like to be busy and I can't be busy at the moment, and that's the frustration, my personal frustration.
I consider myself lucky in many respects. The job front and money and stuff, it is very difficult, very much struggling. But when it comes to my personal hobbies, I'm very lucky that most of my personal hobbies are contained within my household anyway. Mm-hmm. Watching TV, playing computer games, painting my Warhammer models and stuff like that, writing, reading, it all can be condensed in my house, which is lovely. But then at the same time, I miss seeing people. I went to Cardiff to visit my parents because I hadn't seen them since March time, when all this first started kicking off and we were all keeping ourselves locked in and such. So I went down to see them because I miss my mother and father. But with this next lockdown now, I'm probably not going to see them for another couple of months, I imagine. So yeah, I got a lot of aspects that within my home I'm quite happy. I have my wife and my cats and stuff, and everything is great at home. It's just knowing that I can't actually go somewhere, see someone, do something, beyond the confines of my own house, it's just a bit of a nightmare. But we have to plug on, carry on, keep doing what we're doing.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We're lucky that I've got a roof over my head. I've got plenty of food on the table. I've got a cat. I've got family around me. So I've got all that. I've got all my, I shouldn't be complaining really, because I've got my films and my books and all the stuff I do. And I do some writing. But I just, I'm always doing that on the understanding that Thursday I'm going to the gym, or Friday I'm meeting someone over coffee, I'm doing a quiz, I'm doing this. Those little things, I'm not looking for crazy wild party nights. Or going on a trip somewhere, going to Manchester, or going to London, or going, all those little things are just, and it's frustrating that those aren't there. But otherwise, everything else is, I can occupy myself quite happily at home, but I just find it tiring sometimes, and sometimes it just seems like a very dark place. But as you say, we've just got to crack on with it. So we thought we'd do another podcast, just to remind you that we are still here. Although it did look for a while as if we might not be back, but I think we're going to try and do something as and when we can. But it's just that we don't like doing it remotely because it hasn't got that spontaneity and you can't really react in the same way as when you're face to face. But as it's quite clear that we're not going to be able to do it face to face, probably until next year, to be honest, I think the way things are going. We thought we'd try and just throw something together just to remind you that we're still alive. What we're doing, it's a slightly different episode because we haven't got the usual itinerary, the list of things we're going to talk about. We're just going to chat about things we've been watching, things we've been doing. I know Scott's been playing a lot of games. We'll talk about some of those. I think there are a few films and things that we've probably both seen, a couple of TV things that we've both seen that we'll talk about. And just chip in a few ideas of things we've looked at that you might not have looked at that you might want to pick up and have a go. Because obviously there's so much content on Netflix and Amazon and the BBC and all these various, and it's, you know, it's hard to watch it all. But I've certainly dipped into lots of different things. So we'll just rattle through a few things we've watched and particular things you might want to take a look at. So what have you been, having said that then, Scott, you've got all your stuff around you. What exactly have you been doing and watching and playing? Because I know that's going to come into it.
That's always comes into it with me, yeah. Well, first of all, I'll tell you what I've been watching on the old telly box. So because life's been a bit sort of dampened down, I haven't really watched a great deal of sort of negative shows, you know, shows about tough subjects or anything like that. I kind of fancy going back to some of my comedies and stuff I used to watch as a kid. So at the moment I am on the very last season of Avatar, The Last Airbender, of course, which is a very, very good series. You know, they did release a movie with M. Night Shyamalan, and it was awful. But the animated TV series, if you've not seen it, it's a very, very good show, and I would highly, highly, highly recommend going to watch it. I've also been catching up again with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, of course. You know, you can't go wrong with a bit of that. Gravity Falls, a great animated TV series about some kids, you know, two kids going into this sort of new place called Gravity Falls where monsters, you know, gnomes and stuff appear. And it's just very, very fun, very interesting story as well. I fancied something I hadn't watched for years, but I loved as a kid, and it was Jackie Chan Adventures. Again, an animated cartoon series with Jackie Chan being a sort of Indiana Jones type character, goes looking for these little stone sort of tablet things that have animals of the Chinese zodiac on them, and if you hold them they grant you certain powers, and Jackie Chan has to fight to get them from the Dark Hand, which are the villains. And it's just loads of fun kung fu stuff going on there, very typical Jackie Chan stuff. Finished another run through of Parks and Recreation, because who doesn't want to have a good giggle at Parks and Recreation? Anything that is done by the collection of people that do that, same as Brooklyn Nine-Nine, gotta love it. Samurai Jack, I went through that series as well. That's an animated about a samurai gets lost in time and he has to fight against evil robots. I've also watched Sonic the Hedgehog, or Sonic X, animated TV series about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Excuse me a moment, can I just stop you there? Okay. Can I have a different co-host, please? This one's just watching kids' cartoons all the time. Thank you. Yeah, there's a new co-host in the post, apparently. And I don't
think lose all of your viewers because I'm the most popular person ever.
I don't have to pay for postage either. So I'm going to get a whole new co-host who I can program with my interests.
Stepping away from cartoons before I do get properly replaced. I went through the whole seasons of The Good Place, seasons 1 to 4, because, again, who doesn't love a good bit of comedy? I also watched The Rookie, seasons 1 and 2, which is an American-based cop show with Nathan Fillion. Then I jumped into it. There's been a lot of time passing by. I went on a bit of a Queen binge. I watched Bohemian Rhapsody, the film. Then I watched about 4 documentaries on the band and Freddie Mercury. Then I re-watched Bohemian Rhapsody to see if I could tell where some of the stuff that I had watched in these documentaries come into play. Mm-hmm. And I felt really bad for my wife because she went down to look after her mother for a couple of days. She came back during the second watch of Bohemian Rhapsody, so she got bombarded with, do you know this character? Do you know this actor? Do you know this person? Do you know this? Do you know? And she had to put up with about 20 million blooming questions about Queen, which she did so with a lot of grace. So well done for her. That's about it for TV. I haven't gone through many films. I haven't gone through many sort of strong genre-based stuff, really. It's just been visiting stuff that I used to love back in the day that I never got to see. On the front of gaming, I've been playing a game called DayZ, That's D-A-Y-Z. Where you're plonked on an island, you've got nothing but a piece of fruit, a glow stick, and some bandages. And this island's been ravaged by zombies. And you have to go through houses, scavenge for food, keep yourself healthy. You can get cold, you can get ill. You've got to make sure you don't drink any dirty water, so you're going to drink clean water and such like that. It's a very intricate game about keeping yourself healthy and alive. You know, if you're running for a long time, your shoes can get worn. If your shoes get worn, you start getting cuts, you start bleeding. But the zombies aren't the biggest issue in the game. It's other players. Now, you can become friendly with other players and have great player interaction, or you might just get someone to start shooting you. It's very much like playing The Walking Dead.
Unfortunately, I haven't got my sound boxes, so I can't do the necessary at this point.
There you go.
Edit that in when you get there. Yeah, go on.
For instance, when it comes to player interaction, me, my brother, and our friend Tom, we just finished searching through this town. We're about to move on, and another player was coming towards us. So we started shouting at this other player, pointing at guns. We made him put his hands up. He got down on the floor, so he couldn't get any of his guns out. But he promised he was friendly, he wasn't going to hurt us. He didn't seem to have any guns, so we stood him up, we fed him, we gave him some food and such, and let him move on his own back. But then later on, we had another interaction with another player who raided what we tried to secure as a base. They stole our car, filled the boot with some of our stuff, and legged it after having a gunfight. So there's fun interactions with other players that make you feel like you are in a very serious sort of zombie survival situation, and it's pretty good fun. Ghost of Tsushima was a game that came out a couple months ago, which I did a review on. I played through the game, completed it, but they released a free update which has allowed multiple players. So you and your friends can run around as a samurai, a hunter, an assassin, and a ronin, and you can defeat the Mongols together, which is really good fun. So I've been doing a lot of that. I think that's about it, really. Loads of other games I have been playing, but if I go through the whole list, we'll be here for hours. Star Wars Squadrons as well. You know, the space flight simulation about Star Wars combat has been really, really enjoyable. So I'd recommend any Star Wars fan to get that.
And I think I can guarantee that if you did talk about the games that you've been playing for hours, you'd be doing it to a blank screen, my boy.
I thought they already was. Your face was blank and still as it always is when I'm talking about these things.
Not listening, took headphones out. No, that's very good. Well, like I said, you entertain yourself the way that feels best for you. That's all I can say, really. I think you have watched a couple of films, though, haven't you? I think you watched Enola Holmes, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Oh, yeah, I did watch that. Yeah.
We won't talk about that just yet. Did you watch The Haunting of Bly Manor? Because I know your missus did. Did you get around to watching that?
She did. I was going to watch it, but she said she wanted to watch it again with me because some of the stuff she didn't understand.
Well, bless. Okay. That's the new the new horror series on Netflix, the sequel, not the sequel to, but the second series from the people who did The Haunting of Hill House. I think a lot of the same cast. And I haven't sampled that yet because there were other things I wanted to look at. And I only enjoyed bits of The Haunting of Hill House. And I think even though it's Halloween season, I'm a little bit bored with sort of haunted housey type things because they're always a bit, you know, generic and run of the mill. So I haven't tried that, although I might have a look just to see what it's like, because people are talking about it, but it's not been high on my list of things to have a look at. I think what we need to review later on, of course, is Colossus the Forbin Project that our good friend Mr. Emson recommended to us about 3 years ago, which we finally watched about a year ago. Maybe a few months ago, but because we've not been here, we've not been able to do a review. I think we put a couple of Facebook comments about it, but we can just mention that as one feature a bit later on. There's been lots of new shows out there, and I've sampled quite a few of them, and I'm working my way through a number of different films at the moment. I think we also watched...
I'll also talk about The Boys later as well.
I haven't finished watching The Boys because I've seen about four or five of them, and it's very good. A bit slower than the first series. I think it's just developing the themes of the first series. But after about episode 4 or 5, and I think in the middle of all this nonsense, I was thinking, why am I spending an hour watching these really horrible people being horrible to one another? I'm just not quite in the mood for that. I would like to watch something a bit more uplifting. So I haven't gone back to that, but I will finish it at some point. And similarly with Lovecraft Country, I've sort of stopped that after about episode 4, and I need to go back to that as well. So there's lots of shows that I'm sort of in the middle of. There's a new series on Sky One, Brave New World, which I've seen the first episode of, which is a science fiction series set in this sort of dystopian future. It's based on a famous science fiction book written in the 20s, I think, by Aldous Huxley, about this society, this very indolent society that lives this life of luxury in this massive city. And outside in the wilderness, there are people who are just living in these sort of grubby camps and things. And that's, I think it's how the two worlds sort of clash. That seemed quite good. So that's something I will also go back to, and perhaps eventually we can cover it properly in the podcast. But it's just hard to sort of put down an itinerary of things for us to talk about at the moment, because obviously you've not been in the mood to watch them all, and I'm dancing about watching a few different things. We did, however, watch Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous, the animated series.
Yeah, we watched that too.
I've written a bit about that in the next Starburst, which I think is out next week. But that was quite good fun. It was interesting, 8-part animated series that is set at the same time as the first Jurassic World film, but on a different part of Isla Nublar, about this group of 4 or 5 kids who've got this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to live in this sort of survival camp. And, of course, the events of the film are taking place around them. It's quite well done, I think, the way they introduce certain elements of the film, because it starts off before the film, then is during the film, and then ends up after the film. So you get the bits with the helicopter crash into the dome and the pterodactyls and stuff, and certain links. And I thought, after a few episodes, I thought, this is really very clever the way they've done this to make it, even though it's animated, feel as if it's part of the Jurassic Park.
You just had to go about animated films.
No, but this is based on proper films, so I allow this one because it's part of a live action franchise, man. I thought this was really good. I think the first 2 episodes did seem, I thought, yeah, this is just a kids thing, really. But as it, and it was very much just a kids thing, but it got quite intense in places. I think the sort of scenes of jeopardy were quite good. I thought the animation was really good. The dinosaurs looked really good. Yeah. And there was some sort of surprising bits. One character appears to have been, well, not spoiling it, one character seems to meet a nasty fate. It just seemed to, I think it's for young kids, it's quite intense. For anybody under about 6 or 7, I think they might find it quite scary, because the dinosaurs are really well done. The kids get themselves into some terrible situations. And by about episode 4, I was thinking, well, this is actually really good for a kid's cartoon. I think it's really quite dark in places. And you do get I think the characters are quite well drawn. And I don't mean drawn as in animated. I thought they were quite well realised as characters. You got to know a bit about their backstories. And I thought particularly the lead character, it was quite sad, the sort of story about his dream was to go to this island with his father. But his father was ill and his father died and never got there. And you discovered all that later on. And I thought there were nice little bits of light and shade that made it a bit more to it than most sort of noisy animated things that seem to be out there these days.
Well, I comfortably watched through it in one sitting, because it's only 8 episodes, like 20 minutes, half hour long, so it wasn't a big haul. It was just a pleasant watch with a very engaging story, good characters throughout, and it didn't feel silly all the time, which I was expecting from it, because it definitely is designed for the younger audience, but it's quite comfortable to watch for an adult audience. I mean, I'm saying that as somebody that can happily sit down and watch a few cartoons without any issue. But it definitely has, I wouldn't say adult themes to it in the sense that there's swearing or sort of thing. But, you say, it can get quite edgy.
I think that the action scenes are quite intense for kids, because you've got literally dinosaurs breathing down people's necks as they're running along, and people getting trapped, all that stuff that kids like. But
all
I think
stuff that made the Jurassic Park films good.
Made the films, and I think what it didn't sort of talk down to kids. It didn't, wasn't written down. It sort of treated kids as intelligent viewers who could cope with that. But like you say, there was no sexualized content. There was no swearing and stuff, but it didn't feel like a very small kids thing. Like I say, I think you'd need to let, you know, I think you probably need to sit with the kids if they're very young, because it is quite, it's got that scare factor, which, you know, which goes, you know, hand in hand with dinosaurs when you see these things. And like I say, the animation I thought was really good, particularly the dinosaurs were brilliantly done. And it did all the things you'd want of a series like that. And I'm pleased that they've announced there's going to be a second series, because it ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So there's obviously going to be resolution in the second series. And I'm looking forward to that.
I wonder if they'll link it with the new film that we might get to see in about 10 years.
Which, of course, has been actually put back till not till the summer after next. Now it's been put back to 2022. Yeah. It's supposed to be out next summer, so that's gone back.
Well, one of my favorite things about it, though, is when a lot of like sort of side shows, cartoon shows, TV series, when they get put in a movie franchise, especially set in the same time as one, they become a bit unbelievable on why they're there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think, well, that didn't happen in the film, so how's that happened? This doesn't do that. It links in with the sort of Jurassic World film quite nicely.
It's
believable these kids would be there.
Yeah.
Because they're always saying, you know, they're saying in the film that they got new attractions, they're trying to make, you know, things happen and stuff. So you believe that they would have like a camp for kids at this theme park, you know. And yeah, it just worked really well. I was very impressed with it. I probably happily sit down and watch it again, really, because I'm always up for watching dinosaur stuff.
I've seen
the park a million times.
I mean, it wouldn't be my top choice of something to watch again. But if somebody said to me, "Oh, watch this," I'd go, "Oh yeah, I can happily watch that again." Because you say it's 22 minutes per episode, 8 episodes, it flies by.
As we said before on this podcast, who doesn't love a good dinosaur show?
Can't go wrong with dinosaurs, except the times that you do go wrong with dinosaurs,
like Terra Bloody Nova.
And some very poor films, all called Jurassic something, which I've seen over
Jurassic
years.
Space,
Jurassic Hunter, Jurassic Planet. Genuine tat. So anyway, Jurassic World.
Cretaceous
is on Netflix now, and we recommend it. So have a look at that if you can. I've also been watching a few other things. As I said, I'm working my way through a few other series. I'm very much enjoying the new series of The Twilight Zone, which is on, I think that's on Sky One at the moment, and Now TV. It's shown episodically, but I think it's available as a box set. Now, this is the second series of the reboot of the classic 60s anthology show that was created and hosted by Rod Serling. And this came back hosted by Jordan Peele, of course, who directed Get Out and Us. I'm not a big fan of those films. He takes the place of the narrator who sort of introduces these short stories, which are sort of Black Mirror-ish. They've got twists and little, but they're not based on technology. They're more sort of weird things happening to people. Now, I didn't really take to the first series. I didn't get to the end of it because I didn't think the stories were very good. I only watched about three, but I've seen 7 of this new run of 10, and they've been really very good, really good stories, really good twists. Just interesting stories, particularly the first 2 or 3. The first one is called Meet in the Middle, and it's about this guy who is this single bloke who's completely hopeless at dating. He never has any luck meeting anybody, and you see him on these dates. And all of a sudden, he hears a voice in his head, this woman's voice. Some woman is communicating with him. And they get on really well, and they sort of build up a relationship. He's constantly talking to this woman in his head. And it transpires that she actually lives across town. But she tells him that she's married, she's in an unhappy relationship. But they get on really well, just talking telepathically. And they arrange to meet. Because they live some distance apart, they agree to meet in the middle, which is the title of the episode. And there's a fantastic twist at the end. I think I could sort of see where it was going, but it is so well done what happens when he does arrange to meet her. He's on the train to meet her, and suddenly she says, "Oh, I've got you. I'm at the station. Oh, there's somebody following me. Oh, he's right behind me. Oh, I think I've shaken him off. Oh, my God, he's chasing me. He's after me." And she suddenly disappears. When he gets there and finds out what's actually happened, it's very clever. And when you look back, you think, "Oh yeah, I suppose I should have seen that coming," but it's really, really well done. I really enjoyed it. That was the first episode of the series. Then there's another very good episode, which is a sort of a wish fulfillment thing about be careful what you wish for. About this, it's about a pop star who basically kills herself, but she's got this strange sort of coin, which he passes on to this other girl who's like busker in the street. And because the girl possesses this coin, everybody thinks she's brilliant. She's a middling sort of singer, but she becomes a sort of a Taylor Swift-like superstar. But she can't actually handle it because everything she says, people are clapping and cheering and screaming. And it's sort of a cautionary tale about, you know, be careful about what you want because things can go horribly wrong. And there's a twist in what happens to that. But my favourite one was an episode, it's a body swap thing. It's such a clever episode. It's about this bloke who's a struggling actor who can't get anywhere and he can't pay his bills. And his girlfriend's getting fed up with him, so he decides to rob a bank. And as he takes the money from the woman who's behind the counter, there's something happens and he's suddenly in her body and she's in his body. He swapped bodies. Yeah. And it's the story of what happens then is he's trying to get away in the woman's body. Then he jumps into the body of a cop who comes to investigate. Then he jumps from the cop into a jogger. And the story, he gets further and further away from himself, jumping into all these different bodies. And of course, all the people are in different... It's such a clever, clever story. And it's, there's a great twist at the end, which I won't spoil. But so I've seen about seven of these episodes, and certainly four or five of them have been really, really good. There's one which is set in an Antarctic research station with some sort of creature under the ice. There's another one with Morena Baccarin from Firefly. And she plays this woman who's a hotel manager. And suddenly everybody in the world stops and looks up in the sky, and there's this huge glowing orb, like a giant spaceship thing in the sky, and she realizes the truth about the world that she's living in, that it's a sort of a virtual reality construct, a bit like the Matrix. Yeah. And even though it's not a particularly original idea, it's only half an hour, and it's just a really, really good, well-told story. So I'm so impressed and surprised by this. I didn't really rate the first run of this, but they really pulled their socks up for the second. And there's just been, out of the seven I've watched, five have been just really, really good, interesting, well-told story. So I can't recommend that enough. So if you do like an anthology series, and let's face it, who doesn't, because we all love Black Mirror and we all love Inside Number Nine, all these shows, take a look at the Twilight Zone series 2, because it's such a major step up from the first series, and I'm hoping to finish it off this week. It is one of those shows, it's so good I'm rationing it a bit. I don't want to rush it, just dipping into one every few days, because the stories have just generally been so good. I think the only one I haven't liked is you know, because of my reluctance to watch things about teenagers. There's one about a couple of girls in a school who've got some sort of psychic power type thing, and that's just, that didn't really work for me. But it was quite well. I just, anything with teen kids, I'm like, no, don't want that. But I really recommend that. It's showing on Sky One, but as I say, it's all available as a box set if you've got an Now TV, and I really recommend it because it's such a good show. I've also dipped my toe into a couple of shows which have been around for a while. Ozark, starring Jason Bateman, which I think is on Netflix, with Laura Linney. This, I would describe this as like a grittier sort of indie version of Breaking Bad. Quite hard to watch. It's quite bleak. And I've read some criticism of people saying the trouble is none of the people are very likable in it. I think with Breaking Bad, you're always on Walter's side because he was trying to do the right thing for his family, even though he was going down some dodgy paths. And there were people that you liked in it. Jason Bateman plays this lawyer who discovers that his partner in the business has not only been having an affair with his wife, he's also been involved with gangsters and money laundering. I think he knew about that because he'd been involved in it to an extent, but he didn't know quite how much. And this gangster comes along and basically says to him, if you don't get me 12 million within a certain length of time, I'm going to kill you and your family. So he moves the entire family to this place called Ozark out in the countryside outside New York, starts up a new life, gets involved with lots of businesses. But a bit like Breaking Bad, you've got these various gangster characters and dodgy local people who come along, get involved in their lives. And it's very good, but it's, the episodes are all quite long, all about an hour, so they can be a bit of a slog. But it's Jason Bateman, he's always brilliant. But it's a different side of Jason Bateman. We're sort of used to seeing the sort of jokey, sort of, you know, Arrested Development type Jason Bateman. But he's very dark and very moody and quite ruthless in this. You know, he's determined to get this money. He's trying to keep his family together. His daughter has got certain issues, and his young son seems a bit weird. But it's very, very interesting. I've watched the first series. There's three series so far of 10 episodes, with a fourth series due next year. Highly recommended if you want sort of a Breaking Bad type drama. So
it's stuff like that, though, because it's quite bleak. It's stuff like that that I'm not watching at the moment because
well, this is the thing.
Feeling bleak.
Yeah. I thought, and this is why I wasn't going to binge it. People said, oh, I watched it and I flew through it. But after two episodes, I thought, no, this is just a bit too dark to watch like that. So I'm trying to watch it one a week because it's good. It's very well made. It's a beautifully made series. I do want to see what happens, but it's not one that you're going to binge at the moment. I've just started watching a show I just stumbled across on Netflix last week called To the Lake. This is a Russian series. It's about a pandemic, so it's perfect viewing for the moment.
Brilliant.
It's just absolutely ideal. Eight episodes again, and it's about a viral pandemic that's raging through Moscow. And people are ill. It is very much like a COVID-type thing, actually. The people got the cough and the symptoms. Their eyes go red. They're not zombies. It's nothing like that, but they just get this infection and they die. And these two families, there's this family... There's this sort of ordinary sort of bloke who's living with his new wife. He's got his ex-wife and his son living on the other side of the town. His next-door neighbour is this really bumptious, horrible, successful businessman who's got a rebel daughter and a pregnant wife. And when this all kicks off, these two families have to come together to try and get out of Moscow. And the place they're going is to the lake, which is a lake hundreds of miles away, which where this rich bloke has got this villa. And he says, we can be safe if we can get to the lake. And it's the story of them trying to get out of the city when law and order is collapsing around, gangs are roaming the streets. They don't know who to trust, whether they can trust the bloke who lives next door. Then the bloke has to try and find his wife and his daughter. And of course, she clashes with the new one. So it's got all those sorts of relationshipy things. But it's like a road movie type thing. I've seen two episodes. They're basically on the road trying to get out of Moscow. And of course, because it's Russia, it's bleak and it's dark and it's snowy. Again, it's not uplifting entertainment. But even now, I can't resist a global pandemic sort of drama. And I'm enjoying it. It's quite nice because there's not so many characters. It's hard to keep in touch with. It's just these two families and their struggle to get to the lake. So I'll be writing about that in the Starburst After next, but I'm really enjoying that. With the proviso that you might not be in the mood to watch things about killer diseases at the moment. But I think it's really good. So if you do... at some point, fancy looking at something a bit different. It's dubbed, so you don't have to cope with subtitles. I know you're not a big subtitle fan, but I would recommend taking a look at that because it's really very good. There is also a new Walking Dead series that you may be aware of.
Yeah, Walking Dead.
Worlds Beyond. I think it's called Worlds Beyond, which I think has arrived on Netflix. I've seen two episodes of this and that's enough. It's basically your teen Walking Dead. It takes place, I think it's 10 years after the virus, and it's about these teenagers. I really can't be bothered talking about it in a way. Basically, they go on a road trip as well to find out. There's like some organization called the Commonwealth Republic, which seems a bit dodgy and a bit authoritarian. And this one girl wants to find out what happened to her father who went missing in the city at the time of the outbreak. And this group of four kids are traveling across America trying to get to the city. And it's just the usual stuff, zombies shuffling around, they kill them and they hide from them. And it's just nothing. I suppose its USP is the fact that it's a teen series, it's aimed at teens again. But it's just the same old thing. I battled through two episodes.
It's like flogging a dead horse, though,
this horse is so dead. I mean, I know that they're finally putting The Walking Dead out of its misery next year, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think the season 10 finale that was delayed because of the virus, that's just been shown. Season 11 is coming soon, and that's going to be extended by six episodes. So I think it's going to be 20 episodes or something. But they're already planning spin-off series. They've got Daryl and Carol have got their own series. They're going to spin off into their own series. Fear the Walking Dead is still going. This Worlds Beyond is supposed to be two series, and that's going to be done. They're also talking now, Danny Gunnare, who plays Michonne, she left last year to have her own series, which has just been cancelled. So apparently they're now going to do a series with her and Andrew Lincoln as Rick being reunited. Plus, they're still doing films about Rick, what happened to Rick when he went missing. And apparently they got plans for other spin-offs as well. And you sort of feel like saying, well, it's done. You know, Walking Dead was played out. And apparently it's got a lot better since we bailed out on it. But it's done. It's 11 years of it. Leave it now. That's enough. But they seem to think that there are stories that they still want to tell in this world. And I don't think there are. Sitting on the basis of
this. Half the time, I don't know how there can be when you're just doing the same thing every single time. People walking.
Yeah.
Then the zombies.
Yeah.
Then they're walking.
Yeah.
Then the zombies.
I mean, there was
they stay somewhere and they're walking.
There was an interesting visual bit in the second episode of this new one where some of the zombies now are so decrepit that they're covered in moss and they're practically turning into plants. And one of these things is lying there and they go to investigate it and its mouth opens and for some reason hordes of bees come flying out. It's as if like there's been a nest of bees inside or something. Sounds a bit bizarre, but it was quite, oh, this is a bit weird. So I think they're trying to do something a bit different with the actual zombies. But I think that it's just the time for that is gone now, really. Although there was, I watched a zombie. Oh, yes, I watched a zombie film recently, which I'll talk about later, which is very good, which you need to look at, which is on Netflix. So, yeah, The Walking Dead, Worlds Beyond is on Netflix, episode a week. But unless you really, really can't get enough of this stuff, then I don't see the point in watching it. Also, because I'm watching other things as well, I would recommend The Right Stuff, which is on Disney Plus, which is a series, because I love stuff about the early age days of the space age. First Man, of course, one of my favorite films of recent years. Remember that series? I think we watched it with Sean Penn, the first, about the manned mission to Mars, even though that didn't go anywhere. I thought that was really good. I quite like the series Away, which has been on Netflix with Hilary Swank leading a mission to Mars. But The Right Stuff is actually a film in 1983. It's based on a book by Philip Kaufman, I think, which is about the early days of the space race. And this is basically a similar story. It goes right back to 1959, when NASA are determined to beat Russia in the space race and get the first man into space, which, of course, they don't do in the end. And it's about them recruiting the first astronauts and how they became immediate celebrities in America. People want to know everything about them because they were going to be the first men in space. The first two episodes went out last week. The third one is out. I haven't watched it yet. But this is a really good sort of period drama set in the early 50s and 60s. And I just like that story about, I like I said before, the whole space program is something I find fascinating. And one of the great human achievements of going into space and landing on the moon, which we did, because we know people who don't think it did happen, but it did. And I just found it interesting. It's, you know, it's not a big action adventure series, but it's a version of a true story, which fascinates me. And I think it's worth a look. So if you fancy someone like that, that's on Disney Plus, arriving every Friday. What else have we been watching? Ozark. That's pretty much it for TV series, I think. I'm in the middle of watching all these things at the moment, so I haven't finished any of them. Some of them are coming up.
We've got the time.
Like I say, I can't, you know, I can barely sit and watch three or four episodes of something. Although I did watch three Twilight Zones in a row because it was so good. But then I realized, as I said, I wanted to ration it a bit because there's only 10 of them. So I might watch one of those tonight. But so there is, you know, there's a lot of entertainment out there and there's new stuff arriving all the time. And so it's not as if we're short of entertainment, but as usual, it is our duty to direct you towards the right stuff and not just the series or the right shows. But if you're going to watch any of these shows I've talked about today, I really, really think you should look at The Twilight Zone, because I do like that feeling of watching a story which you know is 40, 45 minutes. You're getting in, telling a story with a twist, and then you're out. You haven't got to invest in characters for years on end. It's that great feeling if you don't know what's coming. You don't know what sort of story you're going to watch. So that's the one I would recommend of all those shows that I've been watching at the moment. The Twilight Zone is just really good this year. Let's talk about, before we talk about some films and before we do Colossus the Forbin Project, let's have a look at some news. In fact, let's have the news jingle. Because even though it's not a normal episode, we can still throw in a little jingle here and there. Most exciting news for me at the moment is the news that was announced on the weekend that Dexter is coming back. Did you hear that? Yes. Michael C. Hall as my favourite serial killer. This is the series, of course, that was on Showtime years ago. Ran for 8 years. Probably shouldn't have. 5 years, it was terrific. Then it sort of fell off a cliff a bit for the last 2 or 3 years and had a very divisive ending that saw Dexter in hiding as sort of a woodsman, a log cutter with a big ridiculous false beard. He was supposed to be like a woodcutter in the Canadian wilds, and it sort of left unanswered the question of where he would go from there. And Michael C. Hall, who plays Dexter, has always said he'd be up for going back to the character, and I think knowing that most people didn't like the last couple of series, I think he felt they could do more with it. Well, they announced last week that it is coming back next year, a new 10-part series, limited series. I'm very excited about that because I'm quite tempted to go back and rewatch some early Dexter's again because it was so good. So I'm very interested to see what they'll do with that, if they can redeem it from the train wreck of the last few years and revisit Dexter now, see where he is now, 5 years or so since the series ended, and what he's done with his life. Because the story, as you probably know, he was a blood spatter analyst for the police in Florida, and under the cover of that, when people who he knew had committed terrible crimes but had escaped justice because of evidential reasons, he would track them down and kill them in his own way. Yeah. So even though he did terrible things, you sort of understood why he did them, and he had his own background with his own abuse in his own family. So there's a lot of complicated stuff going on. But he was such a likable character, even though he did terrible things. And I think Michael C. Hall is a great actor, underrated actor anyway. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with that. And that's back next year, apparently. In the world of Marvel films, of course, all sorts of news going on in relation to Spider-Man. Now, you'll have heard that they've confirmed that Doctor Strange is going to be appearing in the next Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
Effectively taking the place of Iron Man as his mentor. And I sort of think, can't we just have Spider-Man do his own thing now?
Yeah, you know? Just have Spider-Man.
He didn't have mentors in the comics. He just learned how to be a superhero. So I just want to see him going solo now and becoming more confident and becoming Spider-Man instead of the Spider-Boy that he is. I've loved Homecoming, especially Far From Home, but I think it's time to take the chains off now and let him, you know, become his own character rather than relying on somebody else. And I think it's a, and I know it's nice the way that Marvel do these crossovers and get characters drifting in and out. And it'll be nice to see Doctor Strange again, because Benedict Cumberbatch is very good. But I just want to see Spider-Man, you know, do his own thing now without anything holding him back or anything else, you know, hogging the limelight.
Did you catch the Morbius trailer?
Yes.
You see that they're linking that with the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yes, that they're doing those little references, aren't they? But of course, another rumour is that Electro is coming back in the new film, played by Jake Fox. Plus, there's talk of Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire coming back, which suggests this multiverse type thing, which of course you had in the animated film.
The Morbius trailer had Michael Keaton's Vulture in it.
All right. Oh, I haven't seen that trailer. I've seen an early trailer, but I haven't seen that.
If you watch, it's right at the end, and who, you know, the actor playing Morbius is walking towards the screen, and Michael Keaton turns up.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a bit pompous of this trailer, because at the beginning it said, from the studio that brought you Spider-Man Far From Home. Yeah. I was like, well, did you? Or did you just say to Marvel, go on, you can have the rights for Spider-Man for this?
Yeah. I think they're I think they're bending things a little bit there.
I'm just a bit concerned that they might end up bringing Venom into the MCU version of Venom, and I don't want that, because I hate that bloody film.
Well, of course, that second Venom film is, I think, was due out about now, but that's been put back to next year.
Yeah.
But I just think the trouble is Tom Holland is so good as Spider-Man. I want to see him do his own thing. I don't want all this clutter of other Spider-Men and Doctor Strange. I just want him out there having a proper adventure without being tied into the rest of the MCU.
The thing is, though, because Sony's got their grubby little mitts on everything Spider-Man, they can do what they want with it, you know. The thing is, we almost didn't get another Spider-Man film with the MCU, did we?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, we're lucky that that's happening at all. But I just think it does him a bit of a disservice in a way, because he's Marvel's poster boy at the end. He's the most famous Marvel superhero.
Yeah.
But I just want to see him as Spider-Man, not Spider-Man. And there's Doctor Strange giving him some advice. And here's earlier. I don't want to see Tobey Maguire back. I don't want to see Andrew Garfield back. And at the moment, it's just a rumor. Marvel were asked to comment on it, and they said no casting decisions have been made yet. They didn't deny it. They just... Yeah. So it makes you wonder if this is all going to happen.
It's so way of making their previous Spider-Man films connected to the MCU.
Yeah.
I mean, and it'll probably make people go back to watch them.
It could be that's the proviso that they've had with Marvel. Yes, we let you do another one, but you have to work all the other Spider-Men into it, so it's all part of the same canon. And of course, the next Doctor Strange film is called The Multiverse of Madness. So they're clearly going down that route of the multiverse. But I hear things like multiverse, and I just go, you know, the thing I like about the Marvel films is that for everything that happens, the characters are sort of grounded in the world. But if you start suggesting all these other universes, and this is why I'm not interested in modern comics, because they're always multiverse this and secret war that and reboot of this. Well, I just want the story.
It's the way of basically any writer can do anything with any character. Yeah,
just reboot things whenever they feel like it.
Say, well, I've just made Batman do this. What do you think? Yeah, it could be from Planet 52. Yeah. Planet 41, you know, it's their way of allowing any writer to write whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
And if it's a good enough story, they can publish it without impacting, much like Abrams' Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, you do whatever you want with it now because you're not going to impact the story, although they didn't do very much with it after when the second movie came out, because they just rehashed Wrath of Khan's story. Yeah. It's just a bit bizarre that... you know, they've gone down that route when they've already got a very solid MCU listing going.
Yeah.
But I think it was always going to go down this route, multiverse route and stuff, because, you know, both DC and Marvel are strong with it when it comes to the comics.
Mm. I mean, maybe they want to try and get that element of the comic market that likes all that sort of stuff. You know, I do worry if they might alienate the ordinary, you know, the people who just want to see the films. They start making it too complicated with alternative universes. People are going to go, no, it's too weird for me now.
Well, they'll probably connect the X-Men films into it then as well.
Yeah, I suppose so. Fantastic Four and all these things, I suppose they could all sort of work their way back around, because I'm sure Marvel would want to do the X-Men and Fantastic Four in their own way.
Mm. Well, Stan Lee loved Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if try and wedge them in somewhere. But they just need to do a decent bit. See, I didn't mind the first film that came out with Chris Evans. The sequel wasn't the best, but it wasn't terrible. But then that recent one they did was just diabolical.
Fan-four-stick. No, that was dreadful. I quite liked those two. I thought they were well cast. It was difficult because you had the Silver Surfer and Galactus, and they're such huge parts of the early Marvel years. They could never really capture that properly. But I thought that Yayo and Gruffied was very good as Mr. Fantastic. Jessica Alba as Sue Storm, she was good. As I say, Chris Evans was good, and Michael Chiklis, I think it was a great cast, and I thought they were good fun. But of course, you know, Marvel Universe has gone in different directions and have been much stronger. But I thought those were pretty good films, personally. It's a shame that
they came out at a time the comic book movies were rather
yeah.
You know, when you look at like Hulk, mm-hmm. you know, not the Incredible Hulk, but Hulk with Hulk. Eric Banner, you know, sort of camp, colourful comic strip type movies. So MCU has obviously put, you know, comic books on a higher pedestal than anything else we've had before. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. But, we might be seeing Black Widow sooner than we think on streaming services.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think they need to think about that, because if that goes back to May again, my slight concern is that, you know, having had this year with no Marvel films, whether they've lost momentum now, perhaps people have moved on. You know, is there, you know, Black Widow, then you've got the Eternals. I mean, there's a lot planned for next year, but is it...
Especially,
you know,
considering they've had an end to a story.
Yeah, people might think, that's the end of Marvel now. We've seen the end, you know, and doing characters that aren't so well known. you know, is the audience going to be there? I just wonder if, I think with Marvel's plan was to have 2 or 3 films a year, and now we've gone 18 months without one. And by the time Black Widow comes out, it'll be nearly 2 years. That's a long time to keep those, you know, that sort of universe on pause. What did you think? I don't know. Have you spoken about the WandaVision trailer? Have you seen that?
Yeah, it was, it's an interesting trailer.
Yeah.
You know, the way they did it and stuff, being the fact of, like, you know, all time family sort of situation.
It's sort of a riff on like 50s sort of sitcom sort of conventions. Of it looks quite interesting. I think you can
ask for what they're going for. I thought.
Well, I think watching it a couple of times, I think what it seems to be, I imagine what it is that Wanda has created this constructed world that she can live in with a version, a vision of the vision that she's created, if you like, because he's dead. So she's created this artificial world. The vision doesn't know that he doesn't really exist because she's constructed him out of her powers. But it looks to me as if some external force is trying to break into that world. And I think that could be the dynamic of the story. And I'm quite looking forward to that. And I've seen the trailer. It does look good. And it was nice to see. I think there's one flash of Scarlet Witch in her comic costume, the red sort of the hat, the red thing you do get. So I think that could be a lot of fun. So I'm quite looking forward to that. But I think that's due out sometime in the winter at some point. So it could be January. That was due out now. I think Falcon of the Winter Soldier was due out, but all these things have sort of fallen back because of the virus, which is so annoying.
But we do have, at the end of the month, The Mandalorian Season 2.
We have two things to look forward to at the end of the month: The Mandalorian Season 2 and Truth Seekers with Nick Frost, and occasional appearances for Simon Pegg. That's coming out on Amazon on the 30th as well, so that's going to be a good day, because I'm quite looking forward to The Mandalorian. I enjoyed the first series of that. I'll need to watch it again, the first series.
I've already watched it again.
I'm sure you have several times. And in fact, I'm still not sure I saw the last episode, to be honest. But I will go back to that again. Because again, I quite like the fact that that was, it wasn't an hour and a half or hour and 10 minutes. It was like 40 minutes, 30 minutes. And I enjoyed it. So I will go back to that. So yeah, that's coming up. And I think we should try and review that in the next episode as a proper review. What do you think?
I'm
quite looking forward to that.
A little bit of news as well on the gaming side of things.
Yes.
As you all remember, I did a review on Doctor Who Edge of Time VR experience, VR game, where you help Jodie Whittaker's Doctor with catching time crystals and such. Very good fun. They've now announced that that game is getting a sequel where Jodie Whittaker will be returning as the Doctor, but also David Tennant will be returning as the Doctor.
There was a trailer last week. Did you see it?
Yes.
The trailer thing. And I'm not, funny enough, I was going to mention that as a news item. I'm not sure how I feel about that, really. Because, I mean, David Tennant, I was cropping up all over the place in Doctor Who things again. Because, of course, you know, he can't do much else at the moment. He's doing the Big Finish audio. He's got another series of those coming out. He's popping up in different places. The character keeps appearing in comic strips. And I think that every time he appears again, it sort of devalues the "I don't want to go" thing, because he keeps coming back, and it's always good to see him, because he's the best of the modern doctors. Come on, let's face it. But it was such a big emotional arc to his ending that coming back all the time, just every time he comes back, it just chips away at that a little bit for me, and it makes you watch the episode now and you think, well, yeah, it's not the end, is it? Because he comes back in the anniversary episode, then he's coming back on this audio, and he's coming back on this game. Sort of feels as if he's never really gone.
Well, I'm looking forward to giving it a go, because as much as I enjoy Edge of Time and I like Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, it'd be great to interact with Tennant Doctor, because he is the best of the...
And I also think that by doing that, they're setting up a 60th anniversary special with the two of them, because that's coming up in about 3 years' time. It's the 60th anniversary. He's already said he'd be happy to come back. To be honest, I don't know if he'd be...
Christopher Eccleston would be good.
Well, I think he might come back as well, because he's doing some audios now for Big Finish, which was announced fairly recently, which is a big surprise. He thought he'd come back. But I think now, 15 years later, I think he's become aware of the fact that that character, the way he played it, matters to people. I think he's forgotten or put aside all the issues he had with the production. I think he just wants to go back to it and do something else in that universe. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see him again and Tennant. Whether the BBC would bother bringing back Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi, I don't know, because they were the beginning of the slippery slope for Doctor Who. So I don't know whether they'd be in a push to bring them back. But Eccleston and Tennant, I mean, who's not going to watch that? So I think that could happen. I think that could happen. But yeah, I'll probably give the game thing a go, because, you know, it is David Tennant. And much as I think, yeah, it takes the edge off him leaving when he comes back all the time, it's always good when he does come back and do things. So yeah, when's that coming out? Is that
sometime next year? I don't think it gave a date.
Because it's all part of this Doctor Who Time Lord Victorious multimedia thing they're doing, which is books, comics, games. There's actually an animated thing coming out next month on YouTube, a 5-part series called Daleks, which is an original Dalek animated story in the style of the old 1960s comic strips from TV21, quite stylish. And I think it's the Daleks versus the Mechanoids. Do you remember the Mechanoids from the chase? Those little circular robot-y things? Well, they're coming back in the animated thing. Have a look at the trailer for that. That's online as well. That looks quite interesting. So they're doing lots of Doctor Who things. I think in the absence of any new episodes, apart from the Christmas episode, which, yes, does guest star John Barrowman, if anybody who's still... I wonder if he's coming back. Yes, he's in the Christmas episode. They're doing lots of Doctor Who things to fill the gap, I think, with a, like I said, it's a big multimedia thing. And they seem to have structured it in such a way that you don't have to see it all. You can try a book, you can try a comic, you can try a game. It stands as a separate, standalone story. But I think there's a bigger picture if you do dip into more than one part of it. I think there's 40 different things, I think, different licensees involved. And I just think, whoa, that's just so much. I'm not going to get involved in it. But I'll certainly try certain things. But there's too much of it to follow all of it, because it's a massive thing that's going on for 18 months, I think. But then that game is part of it. So, so I'll certainly watch the Dalek animated thing, because who doesn't love Daleks? And we'll give the game a go to see what it's like, because it's David Tennant.
As long as the Daleks aren't multicolored.
Yeah, we don't want those stupid fruit gum Daleks back again. And of course, we've got this Christmas episode, which I think is on Christmas Day. Revolution of the Daleks, which does feature John Barrowman as Captain Jack. I can exclusively spoil, because people, I've noticed fans are still going, I wonder if John Barrowman's back. I wonder if, yeah, but he is. I've known it for a year, for various reasons. So,
you did see him, and he wasn't just going to do that one little bit, was he?
I didn't see him, but a friend of mine did see him, but that's a whole other issue. So, he's definitely back in the Christmas episode, which I would imagine will be on Christmas Day, because I don't think the BBC have got much else to show with the virus stopping production of things. And also on a Doctor Who tip, I think the new series is due to start filming any day now if it hasn't already. It's very hard to get any information out of the BBC, but I know Jodie Whittaker was on an online Comic-Con thing with Bradley Walsh and Mandeep Gill last week. She said, we're hoping to start filming again before Christmas. And I would imagine we'll see that maybe next September, which means there'll have been a quite a long gap between series, but that's sort of the way it is at the moment. It's an expensive series. And of course, as we saw with the last series, they travel all over the world filming now, so that's going to be a problem. They're not going to be able to do that sort of stuff. So I don't know how these things are going to work anymore. But we shall see. The Doctor will be back at Christmas, and then sometime next year with a bit of luck. Anything else? A couple of films that have been around. Enola Holmes, that we both watched. You watched that, didn't you? With Billy Bobby Brown. As Sherlock Holmes' previously unknown sister. What did you think of that?
I quite enjoyed it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I would have liked to have seen is a bit more of Henry Cavill as Sherlock, because I think he did a great job. But the film was focused on Enola, so I understood that.
Yes.
But yeah, he was very, very good at Sherlock. But yeah, Millie Bobby Brown is a great actress. You know, anything I've ever seen her in, she does a really good job. Obviously, Stranger Things, you know, she's, you know, fantastic in. And in this, just as much, yeah, it was a really, really enjoyable film. It felt like it was connected to the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes films.
Yeah, yeah. It was era. It was correct in terms of the era. It was the Victorian age, Sherlock Holmes, which is always well, the
there
best.
There were some scenes that were very similar to, like in the first Downey Jr. one, when the explosions are happening, they're running away from the explosions and such. Yeah. You know, there's kind of that scene is in there. So there's a lot of scenes that might look familiar. Yeah. But in general, yeah, the whole film.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it had the same issue I always have with a lot of these films that turn up on Netflix. You can't imagine watching them in the cinema. They're not quite big enough. And the resolution was a bit damp where, without spoiling it, the villain just sort of, oh yeah, just gave up. There was no big final epic confrontation. It was just people in a corridor. Oh, you're behind this. Oh yes, that's right. And the person put their gun down and that was the end of it. And I feel that's often an issue with these films, that they're modestly budgeted, so they can't be big. Okay, you watch them on the small screen, but I think if, and I think this was intended to be in the cinema originally, and you sort of think, I think if I saw this in the cinema, I'd be a bit underwhelmed. It works on television perfectly well, but it hasn't got that scale of like a big blockbuster film. And I think that is a problem with some of these films that end up on streaming services. But I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. It rattled along. And I would give it 7 out of 10, I think.
Yeah, I'd give it 8 out of 10. Primarily due to, again, Millie Bobby Brown. I just think she's a very good little actress.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get around to watching Vampires versus the Bronx?
No.
No. Yeah, that was very good. I really enjoyed that as well. That, again, if you like Stranger Things, you'd probably like that because it had a similar sort of retro vibe to it. This turned up on Netflix a couple of weeks ago, and it's about a gang of kids in the Bronx in New York. The whole area is being upgraded and gentrified, and people's businesses are being bought out, and all the people in their community are losing their jobs and their homes because they're being bought out by a company called Murnau Industries. And it turns out that that's actually the cover for a nest of vampires who are building a network of nests all in around the Bronx in New York. And these kids are all about 10, 12. They discover it and they try and convince the police and their families that there are vampires in the neighborhood. Really good fun. Completely bloodless. There's no horrible vampire bloodletting. You get the sort of hissing vampire threat sort of thing, but there's no horror as such. But it's really good fun. It's very much in the style of those 80s. Sort of kids like films like Flight of the Navigator and The Goonies and all those sorts of things, but in for the modern day, and it's got a really good soundtrack, and the kids are great, and it is, if you like Stranger Things, there's no reason you wouldn't like this because it's got that same sort of feel good factor to it.
A vampire film without Christopher Lee? No, it can't be done. Well,
Christopher Lee's dead, so I think we're going to have lots of vampire films without Christopher Lee, unfortunately. Also on Netflix. Oh, by the way, I give Vampires versus the Bronx, which I think I reviewed on Starburst. I give that 7 out of 10. Also on Netflix, worth a look, although I know it's a zombie film, where I go zombies, called Alive. This is a South Korean film about a zombie outbreak and a bloke who finds himself trapped in the family apartment block while all around him goes to hell, basically. He's trapped in his apartment. There's zombies on the streets. He can't get out. He discovers in the block across the road is a young girl who's also surviving. And they try to team up to get together to get out of the apartment block. And that's basically what it is. But it's done really well. It's very clever. Zombies are actually quite scary again because the proper snarling monsters, not shuffling, Walking Dead snarling things.
My father loves Korean zombie films. Yeah. And he hates this one.
Did he really? Really? Mm. I thought it was great.
He loved Train to Busan and stuff like that.
The first Train to Busan is great. The second one has just come out, Peninsula. That's not very good. I didn't think it was very good. Yeah, I thought this was really good. It reminded me of a French film, which is also on Netflix, called The Night Eats the World, which came out last year, which is about this French bloke who's trapped in an apartment block. It's very similar. But I thought this was really good. It rattled along. It was quite tense in places. Why didn't he like it?
He just said it wasn't very good. He didn't give specifics. But maybe that's just on a caliber of other sort of Korean zombie films.
Yeah, I mean,
he likes the very violent ones, so the ones where zombies like tear people's flesh off and stuff.
I mean, there's a bit of that in this, but it's more concerned. It's more of a survival story than a zombie story. But this kid has lots of sort of narrow escapes from zombies, and there's a nice little bit at the end where they get rescued by this bloke in another apartment, but it turns out he's not quite what he seems to be. And there's a really, it's the ending is quite, it's quite corny because they're sort of they rush up to the top of this building and the zombies pour out and you think, oh, you know, they're dead, they're done for. But there's a last minute rescue, which is a bit, oh, that's a bit cheesy. But I quite enjoyed it. I'd go into any zombie thing thinking, not zombies, I'm a bit bored with zombies. But I thought this was pretty good. Two other films I'm going to mention that aren't out yet, but I've had a chance to see them early. One is called Concrete Plans, which I watched on a screening link that I was very luckily kindly sent by Starburst to review. It's been shown at Fright Fest online this weekend. So this is like an exclusive review of it, but there will be a review on Starburst soon, I think. This is set in Wales, and it's about a gang of builders who are employed to renovate this crumbling sort of mansion up in the Brecon Beacons. And they're employed by this aristocratic young bloke. And there's some very familiar Welsh actors in it, Steve Spears and William Thomas being the most well-known amongst, if you know, sort of Welsh actors. But when they get up to do this work, they're doing this work, and suddenly the guy who's employed them, he's not paying them. He says, I'll get the money to you next month. I'll get the money to you next week. Keep working. There's a different group of them. There's the main guy whose nephew is with him. There's an East European guy who's part of the group, and he's sending money back to the family. There's a bloke called Jim who seemed very violent. And, of course, when the money doesn't turn up, they start to take the law into their own hands to try and get the money off this bloke. And the title Concrete Plans sort of makes sense when you see the films, when you see what sort of happens. Very intense, very very good, gritty. It's more a thriller than a horror film, although it is quite violent and unpleasant things happen because they make some terrible choices about what they're going to do to get the money. But a really good little thriller, which I think will be available streaming in the next few weeks, but it's sort of officially being released this coming Friday. Really recommend it. It's a really good. And it's nice to see a film that's actually set in Wales. With sort of authentic Welsh accents and locations and stuff, because it looks as if it was filmed very close to where we are, up in the valley somewhere. Concrete Plans, look out for that. It's coming out in the next week or so. And another film, which I'm not sure when it's coming out. It's just come out in America, but I've had a chance to see it, called Love and Monsters, which is nothing to do with the Doctor Who episode of the same title, Before You Say, because I know you're going to. This is actually a very clever film. It stars Dylan O'Brien, who is in Maze Runner films, which weren't very good. And a very interesting idea for an apocalyptic story. It's about an asteroid that hurtles towards the Earth. The governments send up nuclear missiles to blow it up, which it does. But all the nuclear fission material that comes from the bombs when they explode lands on the Earth and causes terrible mutations for all the cold-blooded animal life. So reptiles and lizards and snails, snakes, frogs, they all become massive monsters. They wipe out humanity, and there's only 5% of the human race left living in bunkers under the ground. And Dylan O'Brien plays this character called Joel, who makes radio contact with his girlfriend, who he lost contact with when the world ended. She's living in a colony 85 miles away. And because everybody on his colony, they're all paired up and he feels a bit lost on his own, he decides he's going to travel across the hostile countryside to be reunited with her. And it's about what happens when he's out there. He gets attacked by terrible monsters. He meets another survival bloke who's played by Michael Rooker from The Walking Dead and Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's about his adventures and misadventures. And it's a great monster film. The special effects are fantastic. A giant crab at the end, which is like something out of a 1960s animated film. Really exciting. It's got a good story about love and companionship and humanity and all sort of stuff. But the monsters are really good. There's a cute dog in it who doesn't get killed. I can spoil that. Really recommend it. It's a film that's got it'll remind you of A Quiet Place. It'll remind you of Tremors. It's got bits of Zombieland in it because it tries to be a bit that sort of comedic voiceover. It's a mix of lots of different things, but it's also its own thing. And I really enjoyed it very much. I'm not sure when it's coming out over here. I would imagine it'll be available on streaming quite soon. Look out for it. Love a Monster, starring Dylan O'Brien. Really good fun with great monsters. And you've got to love a great monster film. You really have.
Like a good monster.
And there's a new Tremors film called Shrieker Island, which I haven't had a chance to see yet. Because I used to love the original Tremors film. And they've sort of devalued it over the years with all these cheap sort of TV movies and series. But there is a new one, which is apparently quite good. So I might take a little look at that. And I think that's...
There's also a movie coming out based on a computer game called Monster Hunter.
Oh, yes. Is that Milo Jovovich?
From what I've seen, you know, the premise of Monster Hunter, there's multiple games out there, but the general premise is that you move to a new island, and there are, you know, dinosaur-based monsters, giant bird-type monsters, dragons, and you have to slay them.
Yeah.
And that's the premise of the game. So I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do with the film. Now, all the weapons, as it has shown in the trailers, are very big, very chunky, and all the armor and weapons are made from these monsters, because when you go out there and kill a monster, you can take parts of their bodies and stuff like that to build yourself a new weapon. So, you know, it looks the part, but I just don't understand how you can make a film about a game where you just hunt monsters all day. You know, is there going to be a good enough story behind it? I like the clips that you see of that, you know, one of the most feared and biggest creatures on this, the Rathos, which is like a very large dragon. That's the creature, the big dragon creature you see in the actual trailer. So it'd be interesting to see that. You know, it could just be a very good monster film, but I'd be interested to see if there's a story to it, because Monster Hunter it's got a story, but it's not very in-depth, because it's just about hunting monsters, as the title suggests.
Well, I would like to think they will come up with some sort of story for it, but on the basis of things like, you know, Resident Evil films and various other computer-based films we've seen, they might not. They might just think the title is enough. So,
I think the most popular computer game movie is Detective Pikachu. But that's just bit with a computer game-based character. It's not actually based on a computer game as such. Yeah. There is a Detective computer game, but I don't think it's based on that at all. And then Sonic the Hedgehog did pretty well. I quite enjoyed that myself. But then you have things to look back on, like Street Fighter, Mario Bros, stuff like that. You know, Rampage wasn't bad either.
Rampage is quite good. I mean, I suppose I'm fortunate because I can't make the reference to the games. I don't know how they relate to the games. I just watched them as films. And I thought Rampage was pretty good, because The Rock's always entertaining in one way or another. You can't go wrong with
The Rampage. I mean, the premise of the Rampage game is you actually play as the monsters.
Yeah.
And you've got one screen, and you've got to climb at the buildings and trash them.
Yeah.
You're playing as the monster. You know, so you play as George, the gorilla, Lizzie, the lizard, and Ralph, the wolf, which is just weird when you think they rhymed the other ones quite nicely, and you got Ralph.
Yeah, Ralph, yeah. It's not a very scary wolf name, is it?
No, but it is. It's a very good sort of film based loosely on this game. Netflix apparently have made a leak as well that they are releasing a Resident Evil TV series.
Oh, yes.
It's generated, but with characters based from the game. Leon S. Kennedy, who is featured in Resident Evil 2, 4, and 6.
Yeah. Is that good or a bad thing, do you think?
It could be good, because the CG Resident Evil movies are quite fun to watch. So if it's along that premise, then yeah, I'd look forward to that too.
A couple of things to just mention again. Buck Rogers apparently is coming back. Another new TV series, which is supposed to lead into a film and then an anime version, apparently. How many times has that been done? But there we are, apparently that's in the pipeline. Gerry Anderson fans might be interested to hear that. Do you remember that short thing, Firestorm, that came out last year? A little pilot episode of a proposed new series?
Yeah.
Well, apparently there is a series in production, and there's a new mini episode coming out this Friday the 24th on the Gerry Anderson YouTube channel. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing that, because I have a fondness for the Gerry Anderson stuff, and I did enjoy the first Firestorm. And apparently Amazon are doing a film version, a TV series version of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Do you remember that slasher film with Sarah Michelle Gellar years ago?
Yeah, the slasher film that nobody watched.
I watched it, but I didn't see any of the sequels. Sarah Michelle Gellar was Buffy at the time, and you know, you watched what she did. I don't know what on earth they're going to do with the series of this, but I dare say that won't stop them. So that's the news and what we've been watching and doing over the past few weeks. Before we go, because I noticed we're coming up to 2 hours again, how's this happened? Let's do a quick talk about Colossus the Forbin Project, which we watched ages and ages ago. You watched it first, so while I call up the Wikipedia page to remind me of it, what did you think? This is the film that Mr. Emerson down in New Zealand was encouraging us to watch. We finally got around to watching it. We both enjoyed it. What do you think of it, Scott?
I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. An absolute top quality film. It's very much, you can see the it probably gave ideas to things like Terminator, War Games and stuff like that. You know, it's a computer system that's created to basically, you know, look after the world, you know, say when something's happening, do, you know, but there's a second computer that it talks to, and it gets smarter and smarter to the point where it becomes sentient and aggressive towards humankind in the way of protecting it. So it's like, you know, it knows that humans are their own worst enemy, and it becomes sentient in that way. And it's not a very flashy boom boom film, no, like, you know, not like Terminator and stuff. It's more along the lines of War Games, where, you know, but you're singled primarily if you're not in the president's office, is you're in the sort of lab facility where this robot is, and you follow Dr. Forbin, who basically helped create this. You know, he was the mastermind behind the creation, and he gets a little bit kind of trapped by this robot in a room. It's a very, very interesting, very, very well told story, and incredibly acted.
Considering the
it's these kind of films that I think we need these days. You know, great writing, great script, doesn't need CGI or flashy, you know, images all over the place. It's just so simple and amazing.
This was made in 1969 and released in 1970. And if you look at it, there's nobody in the cast that we know. There's no household names: Eric Braeden, Susan Clark, Gordon Pinsett, William Shalit. Nobody really well known, and that really helped, I think, because it brought you into, you weren't thinking, oh, that's so-and-so from this film, or that's Charlton Heston, or anything. It's just these people. And like you said, it's completely unflashy, it's unshowy, but it's the idea. And it prefigures all these things we get now about, as you say, Terminator, and all these things about artificial intelligence and independent thinking machines and how dangerous they could be. It's sort of a Black Mirror-type, Charlie Brooker-type thing. It must be one of his favourite films, about how, you know, technology running out of control. Very tense, very, very cold and clinical sort of film, not a big emotional thing, but very thought-provoking and quite chilling. And it must have been back in the day when computers weren't things that we held in our hands everywhere we went. It must have been quite a scary thought, that, you know, is this what computers could do eventually? And it, even now you sort of think, well, you know, they're talking increasingly about artificial intelligence and, you know, machines that think on their own. And it just makes you realize how ahead of its time, bearing in mind it's 50 years old.
And being 50 years old, I'm not afraid to spoil it because it's been out for ages. I won't spoil it directly, but what I will say, I've said before, that it's my favorite type of ending. Because you get so many films with this whole woo, happy, happy, lucky, lucky endings, everybody's safe. This has a very damp ending, and I like films like that because I just think it makes it more believable to have a film every now and then that isn't so you know, glorious, and you know, the world survived and everyone was okay. You know, it's very damp, but I have to keep saying it because I think people need to realize is that this is how a movie script should be written. Everywhere you go in this film, which isn't many places, but when you do go to these places, and the way the characters act, the way the people act based on their professions and stuff, it's just so believable. And in this day and age, when you see the computer technologies they have, you probably give a little chuckle, you know, because we're used to everything being, like you said, in the palm of our hands and stuff. These are all big computers and single line screens with red lights going across it and stuff like that. But you know, this is the 60s and 70s. You know, they didn't have all this flashy tech, so you know, be understanding of the time it was out. But you need to give this movie a go, especially if you like your sort of technology gone awry sort of stories, because it's not just one computer sitting there saying, "I'm in charge of humans." there's like this second computer and it's learning from it, and so it's just very, very clever, very well written. And not once did I feel out of place watching it, thinking, what's going to happen?
I was watching it
thinking, what the hell is going to happen? Because this is some intense stuff.
It was, I liked about it, and it's something you got in the 60s and 70s, proper science fiction films, not monsters and spaceships and aliens, but proper science fiction things, a story that asks questions about humanity and technology and things that you don't get so much of these days.
It's not really science fiction now, though, is it?
It's
more fact.
But it does what science fiction does is take factual things and postulate what could happen. And that's proper, you know, what science fiction is really all about. Sort of holding a mirror up to society and things and showing possibilities. Yeah, just a great film. I'd say so gripping from the outset, and that sense of growing disquiet, I suppose, that this machine is ruling everything, controlling everything. There's nothing anybody can do about it. And that's quite the helplessness side of it is really quite scary, more scary than monsters and aliens and things, because it's a machine that's controlling things.
And for you lads and ladies out there, there is a fair bit of male and female flesh too.
Yeah, not too much. So not enough to scare the horses, but it was a bit racy in one or two places. So yes, thank you. I would give it a 10 out of 10 personally, because it was a great film.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. I really, really enjoyed it. It's very gripping for something that didn't try to be over the top and flashy. Very, very gripping. And in this day and age, I think it's nice to have something a bit more grounded than having constantly, look at this CGI superhero fighting the CGI superhero villain. Very, very good shout out. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for that, Mr. Remsen. And we always welcome any recommendations of things we might not have missed, whether they're films.
Now that we're starting to watch them,
Now we're eventually watching them. It only took us a year. So there we are. I think that's any other business, Scott? I don't think there's anything else we could possibly talk about.
This is only going to be a quick sort of...
I thought it would be an hour at the most, but we're 2 hours and 4 minutes in. Great talk.
I feel like we're kind of back on form.
Well, apologies for any sound quality issues. We are on Skype, of course, so it's not going to be our usual studio quality. But bear with us until this is all over, when in about 6 months' time, we'll be back to normal, hopefully, whatever normal is by then. Unless there's anything else then, Scott, I think it's time to say goodbye to these young people. Let them have their lives back. It's been a
pleasure speaking to you all again.
It's been nice being back. Hopefully, we'll see if we can do our Halloween special, maybe next week, just a short hour-long thing. Perhaps if I can find we can watch and do a quick chat about. If anybody out there wants to recommend horror films we haven't seen, we can try and watch them by next week and do a little special for an hour in our haunted Halloween tradition. Hopefully next week then.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, well, I'll go away now. My name is Paul Mount, and you are...
My name is Scott Holmes.
And we are back, for better or for worse. We'll see you soon. Goodbye now.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.